Justice and Drew, along with Sam here on Twin Cities News Talk. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. About to talk to our D.C. correspondent, Andrew Langer, brought to you by Randy's Electric.
Good morning, Andrew. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, gentlemen, and good lady.
Good morning.
Piece out of Fox News. We'll start here. We got a number of different things we want to talk to you about. But CNN slammed for glowing puff piece about Kim Jong-un's sister at Olympics. In the article published Saturday afternoon, it said this: if a diplomatic dance were at an event at the Winter Olympics, then Kim Jong-un's younger sister would be favored to win gold with a smile, a handshake, and a warm message in South Korea's presidential guest book. Look, how much, my opinion is this whole thing started with Pence. Like, the media can't stand Pence so much that the contrast between Pence and Kim Jong-un's sister was too much to resist. So they had to go and lavish praises on this individual who's part of a horrible, murderous regime.
Yeah, just like the head of propaganda.
Keep in mind, the other part of this is that they are trying to suggest that this new dawn of relations between North Korea and South Korea is somehow going to drive a wedge between the U.S. and South Korea, which is idiotic, seeing as how we're responsible for a massive part of their GDP. But yeah, I mean, this is the reality. And the other part of this, of course, is that the warm, cozy relations between North and South Korea are in no small measure due to the fact that Donald Trump was working so hard to anger and annoy both sides that it brought them together to sort of face a common, I wouldn't say enemy, but, you know, to sort of look with disdain about this, you know, at this doofus in Washington. And that's not, you know, my opinion. That's what I'm saying is their opinion of it is.
Right. Yeah. The analysis that I heard that I thought was kind of ridiculous. I mean, maybe there's something to it, is, you know, with Trump sort of taking an America first stance and the rhetoric being of, you know, we have to protect America, we have to protect Americans, the South Koreans might feel like they've been devalued in the eyes of the administration, and that, you know, the administration would be willing to sacrifice South Koreans in order to protect Americans. I mean, I don't buy that, but that's sort of been the analysis that a lot of people have taken. Do you give that any weight?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the reality is that what happened is that the tensions between these two guys, and then by that I mean Kim and Trump, you know, were so heightened that and I think this is by design. I'm more and more thinking that a lot of this is by design. That, you know, Trump ratchets up the rhetoric. The South Korean president, his name's now escaping me, you know, the South Korean government becomes sufficiently alarmed that they, you know, turn around and take a greater ownership stake in their own future. I mean, this is exactly what Trump campaigned on, this idea of we are not supposed to be the protectors of the world's policemen. We want South Korea, we want Japan, we want these other nations to take a greater interest in their own futures. And if it means sort of ramping things up so that, you know, hey, if you go, tell them, hey, if you go down this road with us, this is how we're going to do things. So maybe you ought to take a greater role in this. And that's what I think has happened here. And it is fascinating to watch.
Well, and again, it further lends to the lack of credibility from outlets like CNN when they go the route of completely dismissing the background of where Kim Jong-un's sister is coming from to go and lavish this type of praise upon her. And they do themselves no favors by doing that.
You know, when they try to have Kim Fields from Facts of Life, then I'll be happy.
Why does CNN? I mean, CNN has to know that this was a terrible headline, and they certainly know that they've been dragged through the mud for 2 days now regarding it. Yet it's still out there and it's still up, and I haven't seen really any reaction or response from CNN to the criticism. Do they just not care?
CNN is turning around and focusing all of their attention on the Porter story and the Me Too movement and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And so they're just going to kind of let this go in the same way, I think, that the, you know, NBC had that great gaffe during the opening ceremonies. About the South Koreans and Japan. The NBC apologized, but I think, you know, there are many who just want to sort of see these kinds of things sort of go away.
Switching gears a bit, let's talk a little bit about the budget deal, and rightfully so, a lot of conservatives upset, you know, Rand Paul being the lone sort of holdout that, you know, made his views on this be known. But I'm seeing, and appropriately so, a lot of individuals who support President Donald Trump who are looking at this deal and talking about this is not what the GOP should be doing. What are your thoughts? Is it going to be damaging?
Well, I get it. I mean, I guess there's an idea going around that it's very hard to drain the swamp if you are putting more money into the swamp. And I understand that. I take a slightly different view because, yes, I get concerned when we spend more money, and we need to take a long, hard look at entitlement reform. But on the other hand, there was so much more to be gained by getting this deal because it essentially takes the monetary cudgel off the table in terms of the both the infrastructure and, more importantly, the immigration debate. Right now, Donald Trump can go ahead and say, hey, if you don't get me a deal on immigration, I am going to end the Dreamer program permanently. And then where will you be?
I do question if depending on what Trump does with DACA, if we begin to see pushback if he starts going more of the bipartisan route. Because my concern comes down to the fact that, you know, we talk about bipartisanship, we're talking about reaching across the aisle, but if you do that, you're going to end up ticking off your base. And the problem that I have is that when you can say, well, we'll use it as an argument, we'll be better than the Democrats, look at what we do when we're bipartisan, look at how we're all kumbaya, but then when the Democrats get back in power, they are not going to do that. Right. They will not be
not
reaching across the aisle.
Credit.
No.
I agree with that sentiment, that second sentiment, wholeheartedly. To me, it is, part of this is about making sure that nothing distracts going into the 2018 midterms from the good news about the economy. And so if you can take the immigration fight off the table, this is one particular view of the politics of the situation. Then you're going down this road. But I will say this much, guys, right? You push back. This is what these kinds of compromises and political negotiations, this is what so many Americans have been clamoring for. And so, yeah, it's going to, there are decisions that are going to be made that are going to upset people in the base. But when push comes to shove, right, in 2020, are they going to vote for Elizabeth Warren? Or are they going to vote for Donald Trump? Right. With the confounding variable being if somebody like a Mike Lee challenges Donald Trump from the right.
Switching gears again, let's go here.
Sure.
Democrats' very political memo was weaponized so they could play the transparency blame game. That's a headline out of the Washington Examiner. Now, there was a lot of Trump was taking a lot of hits because he released the GOP memo, but he would not. He blocked the Democrat one. But the talk has been that they loaded it with a bunch of stuff that they knew was going to be classified, that they would not allow it to be released. And Trump has come back around the backside and said, "Hey, look, if you take those things out, I'll release the memo." Is this whole thing dying down just across the board? I mean, is the whole issue of the memos and FISA, is it slowly drifting from the headlines and therefore out of the minds of the public consciousness?
Well, it's out for the time being, but not forgotten. I mean, when you have these other issues sort of taking precedence over it, between the Olympics and Korea and the president's budget coming out today and the infrastructure plan coming out today, all of those things are going to take precedence. But I fully believe the memo is going to be back in square one. You know, remember, these stories come in waves, and we have the particular scandal du jour of the week. So once we get past the Porter situation, and whether or not the Democrats are able to get John Kelly's scalp, which I don't think they will, but they're trying, then we move back to, you know, these other important issues. And I urge everybody to go out and read Andrew McCarthy's great piece in the National Review on Saturday about how big this scandal is, why these memos, and why there's a Grassley memo out there that if you haven't read it, you got to take a look at.
Do you buy into the notion that the Democrats put this information in the memo on purpose Trump to not release it?
This was their modus operandi. They wanted to be able to say that the White House forced them to edit the memo. You've got this complete jerk, Eric Swalwell, congressman from California, who's just a smarmy guy that they have on because Adam Schiff's been such a disaster on CNN, you know, talking about how, oh, well, ours had to be War and Peace, which incidentally isn't a very good book, but ours had to be War and Peace because the Republicans' memo was just a nursery rhyme. I mean, you know, listen, this is exactly what they were going to do. They will continue to push back on this. But the facts that are in this memo, the Republican memo, are not in dispute. I mean, you know, we now have, and now with the text that came out last week, you know, we now have the White House and John Brennan at the CIA directly involved in this situation, and this is really disturbing stuff.
You know, I can't help it. I'm going to be somewhat cynical here, but I'll open it up and get your guys' thoughts on this, right? How okay would you be if the FISA issue and the memo in the court slowly drifted from the media, but with that, so did the Russia collusion narrative against Donald Trump? Because I do think there's a possibility that one is attached to the other one. And if the GOP were to calm down and the Democrats don't want to continue to make an issue of it because they know what a big deal it is, then it has the potential to take down that Russia collusion narrative. And is that trade-off worth it? Or is the bigger picture of the FISA court and accountability and what they're doing too important?
Well, listen, I think this is so much bigger than the FISA court, John. No, I would not want to let it go because if it's demonstrated that Barack Obama was intimately involved in a use of our intelligence services and our criminal justice services to go after the opponent in the 2016 presidential elections, that's just too big for any of us to ignore. That is massive, and so I wouldn't. And frankly, even short of that, you know, getting further evidence and proof that people at the FBI and DOJ were affirmatively in the tank for going after Donald Trump, I can't ignore that. We just can't sit for that. That takes consequences. Barack Obama, he's not in a position to resign, but he is in a position to go in front of a judge and have to explain himself.
Talking with our D.C. correspondent, as we do every Monday, Andrew Langer, powered by Randy's Electric.
Yeah, that's the big thing for me. I want accountability, because if there's no accountability, then there's no way anybody could have confidence that it won't happen again. And that it won't be worse next time. And they won't have learned.
I mean, there was zero accountability in terms of the IRS Tea Party scandal. And every time you don't hold these people accountable, it lets the left off the hook. And they can come back and say, well, nobody ever went to jail in the IRS scandal.
If there's no accountability, they're just going to do it better next time.
Nobody's been indicted at the FBI. It's like, okay, you know something? I would like some accountability so I can push back against that narrative.
Well, and there's no, they're just going to do it better next time. If there's no accountability, though, they will have learned from their mistakes, and they will cover their tracks even better next time. We've got a call I want to take here while we got you on, Andrew Langer. Darren in Savage, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me on. Hey, I'm done with compromise, because every time I hear the word compromise, all it means is that if the conservatives lose, the Democrats win. And I'm tired of that. I want us to actually stand firm and start fighting for our values and our principles.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Darren. I was saying on the show on Friday, I'm kind of tired of this reaching across the aisle bipartisan nonsense. I want overwhelming majorities.
But I've been wrong on the record as saying you cannot reconcile liberty with anti-liberty. But the problem, of course, is, guys, that until we get a supermajority of free market limited government types, it's going to be obstruction, which I'm fine with, right? I'm fine with Congress doing nothing. Or we're going to get these situations in which compromises are going to happen. So, you know, yeah, I get that. But until we start electing more, you know, this is our lot.
Andrew Langer, president of the Institute for Liberty and host of the LangerCast, instituteforliberty.org, again, powered by Randy's Electric. As always, thank you so much for the time this morning. Sir, greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Talk to you next Monday.
Take care.
I don't mind. I mean, I'd like to see compromise if it were equally shared. I mean, the way that politics should work, you know, because you do have two dominant opposing parties, there should be the ability, whoever, regardless of who's in power, to have a reaching across the aisle. But the unfortunate byproduct of that is when the other party is in power, that being the Democrats, that doesn't ever go that way. And so you end up compromising too much. And for me, it comes down to a question of, do you want the ability to say when they are in power, when they don't compromise, that, hey, we did, do you want to be able to use it as an argument? You know, is that worth it? Right?
No.
It just makes you feel good.
Yeah,
I did the right thing, you know, but no, I'm kind of with you and kind of with Darren, you know, and it's tough. It's very, very tough.
Yeah, we've got to start moving in a more libertarian, liberty-minded, free market-minded, small government-minded direction. We can't. The current path is unsustainable. And if compromise is just going to mean we go down the current path at a bit of a slower pace, that has no value to me.
Coming up on Justice and Drew, we will get to this Washington Examiner article about DACA. It seems like the Washington Examiner gets it about the problem with DACA and the way the media spin has been. Plus, we'll dive into some local issues, local elections, five reasons why Rick Nolan's announcement is a big deal. Also, Tim Pawlenty, you know, how big are the vulnerabilities if he were to decide to go and run for Minnesota governor?
Justice and